Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Wherever you are listening from in East Africa, a very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Nigeria's largest opposition party chooses former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari as its candidate in the 2015 elections.
My nomination is not because I am better than any of the other contestants. I see it as a tribute and mark of confidence to carry the torch as we all join hands to rescue our dear country, Nigeria.
East African leaders meet in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, to discuss a major port project. We found out what happened there.
And in principle, we think for this region to prosper and to grow, there is need for collective engagement, the rail being one of them.
And as the climate conference comes to an end in the Peruvian capital of Lima, we look into the issues at stake for sub-Saharan Africa amid global struggle to cut down on greenhouse gas.
Top story.
Nigeria's largest opposition, the All Progressive Party, has chosen Muhammadu Buhari as its flag bearer for the upcoming general elections, scheduled for February 2015. At their party convention in the financial capital Lagos on Thursday, the 71-year-old beat four other candidates to win the nomination. Buhari, who is a former military ruler, will face incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan in the presidential poll. Ben Shimang has more.
It is official. General Muhammadu Buhari is the man to challenge Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. General Buhari, a former head of state, won a contested vote against Alhaji Atiku Abubakar, a former vice president, Mr. Sam Nda Azaya, a journalist and publisher, Alhaji Rabiu Kwankwaso, the present governor of Kano State, and another governor, Rochas Okorocha. In his acceptance speech, the general indicated that he is going to fight corruption out of the country.
My nomination is not because I am better than any of the other contestants. I see it as a tribute and mark of confidence to carry the torch as we all join hands to rescue our dear country, Nigeria, from those who have led us into the current state of insecurity, poverty, sectarian divide, and hopelessness among our people.
Buhari will be challenging President Goodluck Jonathan in the February 14 presidential election. The People's Democratic Party, in power since 1999, meanwhile endorsed Goodluck Jonathan, unopposed, for a second term. Many have been criticizing President Jonathan for his failure to curb Boko Haram insurgency and corruption in the country. Despite those criticisms, Jonathan still wants Nigerians to give him a chance for another term.
I will work to secure Nigeria's future. I will serve with humility and moderation, with simplicity and forthrightness, with openness and inclusiveness, and with firmness and strength. I urge all Nigerians to support me to finish what we started together. What we need more than anything else is to secure our country's future by building and not by destroying.
From now on, these two politicians are officially allowed to start their political campaigns. Nigerians can only hope that the campaigns will be issue-based rather than intrigues, name-calling, mixing politics with insecurity, among others. And here are some ordinary Nigerians airing their expectations.
All of them have served the country in various capacities. So if any of them happen to be a winner, he has many things to do. Like, since they have already known what it takes to be a president, so all of them may have or they must have their own agenda for the country and for the people of Nigeria.
Well, for me, I believe Jonathan stands a better chance because he has age on his side and he already has started a lot of projects and he needs to complete them.
Well, it's all right. It's a serious contest between the two gladiators that happened in the contest before they had it 2011, and the result is now history. I want to believe that the issue of insecurity that is now going to play a serious role towards the timing in the voting pattern of Nigerians will not in any way change anything. I wish them luck.
Ben Shimang reporting from Abuja. Nigeria's political experts are speculating that these elections will be the closest contested since the country returned to full-fledged democracy in 1999. But who is Muhammadu Buhari? My colleague Assumpta Lattus put that question to Hussaini Abdu, an Abuja-based political analyst.
The 2015 contest will actually be the fourth in the contest. So that what that means is that since Nigeria returns to democracy, he had contested virtually in all the presidential elections except one, and that was the first presidential contest in 1999. He was a former military head of state who led the coup against the government of President Shagari in the early 80s and served for less than 2 years as a president. He's reputed more for his very strong stance against corruption and indiscipline in the country. He managed General Abacha's subsidy removal fund, which was called PTF, that was invested in hospitals, roads, and all that. And one of the major things he's credited for is transparently manage the resources and ensure that those resources actually work for people.
And how big are the chances that he will win this election? And how big a challenge is he to President Jonathan?
I think Buhari has always remained a big challenge to all the presidential contests. Yes, of course, the result eventually also show on relative underperformance. In 2003, he was a major contender against President Obasanjo. And in 2007, the same thing, he was also a major contender against Eraduwa. He has strong backing, especially in the northern part of the country, and particularly the northwest and the northeast of the country, where the bulk of also the voting population actually comes in. For the first time, the election is going on with a strong opposition. I think apart from 1999, there hasn't been any presidential context that came up with a stronger opposition like the one we have now, because most of the opposition parties coalesced in 2 years ago to form a new opposition party called APC. That has possibly changed the dynamics of elections and electoral politics in the country. Of course, we knew that it is always very difficult in any way in most African countries to defeat an incumbent president. So that's going to be a tall order, really, for the opposition in terms of actually getting them to beat an incumbent. It's going to be a very, very tall order. But we are aware that the opposition has never been stronger than they are currently.
How different is he to President Jonathan? Is he offering any alternative to Nigerians who are going to have to choose between him and President Jonathan?
That's the major challenge that we Nigerians actually currently have. Nigerians are very worried that the opposition is not presenting a strong alternative to what we currently have. There has been those concerns. There is also a very strong concern around the membership of the party, where people keep moving from one party to the other. There are a lot of people from the PDP that have moved to APC very recently, even including today or yesterday. Every day you find this kind of movement, the same way how the APC members are also moving to PDP. This election is going to run on three major issues. That is, if politicians don't sway it to begin to speak about ethnic, religious, or regional matters. But I know it's going to run on three major issues. One is an issue of security in the country. The second one is that the presidency is going to be run on corruption and trying to see what the current leadership has done in the fight against corruption and what the opposition is actually putting on the table in terms of their response to corruption. And I think the third major issue will also be infrastructure. That will be also what the president's performance, particularly on electricity. And I hope that the politicians will deal with those issues and not actually push the country to begin to debate on ethnicity, religion, region, or whatever they are talking about.
Hussaini Abdu speaking from Abuja.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
A one-day meeting of East African leaders has ended with a decision to construct a new railway line. The meeting, which took place in the Kenyan capital Nairobi on Thursday, has resulted into the biggest joint development project in post-independence Africa, known as the Lamu Port, South Sudan-Ethiopia Transport Corridor, LAPSET. The railway is expected to be completed in 42 months and it will link Kenya with its neighboring countries. James Shumayula reports.
The leaders of Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi and South Sudan spent many hours briefing each other on the progress made so far regarding several regional projects, including the 609-kilometer rail track expected to link Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa to landlocked neighbors Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan. However, The leaders did not say when the construction of the railway will commence. Kasim Omar, director of East African Business Council, disclosed that the new standard gauge railway will not reach Tanzania, which has its own old railway built during the colonial days and a harbor on the Indian Ocean.
Tanzania has no option but to modernize its rails as well. Tanzania has no choice, but it will have to link up with the rest of the EAC region. And in principle, we think that for this region to prosper and to grow, there is need for collective engagement, the rail being one of them.
Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Amina Mohamed, said even before the construction of the railway starts, already there is fast movement of goods from Kenya's Indian Ocean port of Mombasa to three East and Central African countries.
The movement of goods from the port of Mombasa to Kampala, to Burundi, and to Rwanda. On aviation, we have one in Uganda. Amazing. For me, this is the most exciting thing that has happened in the region for a very long time.
Representing South Sudan at the Nairobi meeting was Rebecca Joshua Okwashi, who underscored the importance of the new railway to her new nation.
It gives us an opportunity as a new nation to rally together with the fellow brothers and sisters in the region. Our interest as a region is to move our people forward in terms of growth, in terms of development.
For South Sudan, Lapset Corridor will be a new lifeline to the outside world. Tanzania's Minister for Cooperation in the East African Community, Samuel Sita, explained why East Africa region is yet to advance in terms of infrastructure compared to Southern and Northern Africa regions.
We remain behind because we have not been very active in terms of joint projects. And I think this approach is already bearing fruit because of the success in getting finances for fuel pipelines, improvement of the roads, railway lines, improvement of our airports.
The new railway, according to Kenyan diplomatic sources, will in future snake its way across the African continent to Douala and Cameroon, opening up yet another alternative route for transatlantic trade and business between Africa and America.
That report was compiled by James Shimayula in Nairobi.
Human rights.
Child marriage has become a major issue that many organizations have been campaigning against in Africa. The United Nations Children's Organization, UNICEF, reports that one out of every three children is given into marriage before age 15. The 10 most affected countries are found in Africa. The UN's Population Fund, UNFPA, is appalled by this figure and is therefore training journalists to increase awareness of the situation. Our Zimbabwean correspondent Columbus Mavunga was among the group of African journalists included in the training. He filed this report from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Makanaka Wakatama is from Zimbabwe and is now in her 20s. She got married when she was 15. Her marriage, however, did not last that long. It broke down and now she's moving around her country telling girls to avoid her mistake.
The increase in child marriages, mainly it's poverty. Let's talk to these young people so that they become responsible. They know when to say no, and it's everyone's responsibility. If it starts from the community, I'm sure we will get somewhere. Let's give equal opportunities to girls and boys so that they reach their full potential.
And this was the main issue raised at the 2 days media training on ending child marriage in Southern Africa. According to the UN's Population Fund, UNFPA, some African countries are among nations which have the highest rates of early child marriages in the world. Here is Precious Zandonda, a gender and communication official with UNFPA.
I can just give you an example of Zambia. We have about 42% of girls getting married before the age of 18, and we have similar trends in countries like Ethiopia, Congo, and Niger.
What are you doing to help the situation?
UNFPA has invested about $20 million to address the needs of adolescent girls in these countries at risk of both child marriage and teenage pregnancy.
And yet, the girl child's rights continue to be violated. Activists say the issue of early child marriages on the continent is worrisome and needs to be addressed through awareness. Emily Napambo works with Plan International in Southern Africa.
The media can play that role of informing the public of the dangers of child marriages, because sometimes you notice that people do engage in it without really recognizing the dangers that child marriages have, not just on the girl, but including in retarding development of the countries.
Besides poverty, cultural beliefs is also another cause of early child marriages. Experts have urged communities to get involved in the efforts to end child marriages. Maria Soledad de Paso, who works with UN in Zambia, explains.
This early enforced marriage further perpetuates a string of other human rights violations, because these girls are prevented from accessing quality education, from accessing employment and other opportunities to develop their lives. In terms of health, everybody knows the body is not properly developed to bear a child, and there is huge rates of maternal mortality and child mortality as a result.
That report was filed by Columbus Mavunga in Lusaka. The climate conference in Lima, Peru, has ended on Thursday amid series of demonstrations. Environment ministers and climate change campaigners have been meeting to find solutions to the increasing level of greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. So far, there is no sign of a breakthrough, as developed countries remain hesitant to make commitments to cut down on emissions. African representatives there are disappointed at the lack of progress yet again. Elias Ngalame has this report.
Representatives from local communities and environmental activists from around the world took to the streets in Lima on Wednesday to demand action from the politicians who had gathered for the United Nations climate change talks. With little time left, there are fears that the roadmap leading to a more crucial meeting in Paris next year is not going to materialize. Jan Kowalczyk is a climate change policy advisor for Oxfam Germany.
The current situation is that negotiators have gone through the text that the co-chairs had presented to them in the beginning. And now over the week that we had, the past week, we negotiators have already identified the fundamental and the critical issues that require ministers to step in and sort them out for them, because they are highly political. And what will come out of these ministerial engagements will define whether or not Lima can be considered a success or not.
Right now, there is little hope that the meeting will produce meaningful progress towards a pact designed to meet the United Nations goal of limiting average global warming to 2 degrees Celsius. Jan Kowalczyk explains some of the problems.
Fundamental issues here are, on the one hand, how can we ensure that every country contributes its fair share to the global effort to limit global warming? And that means, how do you differentiate between countries? Countries taking into account their level of development, their responsibility for emissions, and so forth. And on the other hand, the other critical issue is, how do you organize financial support given to poor nations, including making good of promises that developed countries have made in the past, but as well also with regard to future provision and mobilization of financial support in the new agreement.
Delegates from African groups attending the talks say their views are not being taken seriously, although their request for adequate financial support to deal with the consequences of global warming has met with a positive response from NGOs, including Oxfam.
The African group has, they have tabled a very good proposal, in our view, a very good proposal with regard to financial support that would request developed countries to explain to developing countries how are the rich countries going to meet their promise to increase financial support to the $100 billion per year by 2020. This has so far been rejected by developed countries. So they said, we don't want to explain you how we are going to meet our promise. And this is the current standoff.
A special meeting of the African Ministerial Conference on the Environment expressly commended the sustained efforts by the African leaders and the African negotiators in Lima to develop a coherent common African position to address the issue of climate change and its adverse effects in Africa. The many protesters who took to the streets on Wednesday also want to see more movement in the direction of climate change.
Elias Ngalame with that report.
Your say.
It's time now to hear what you, the listener, have to say about the stories we have been reporting. Emily Sharwin is here with me in the studios with some of your responses. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Right, so Thomas Lovelace Com from our listeners' club in Kumasi in Ghana has written in regarding the new broadcasting time of our radio programs. And in his words, he said, we welcome this new idea because most of us go out to work in the mornings, mostly after 9 a.m., and we return late at night to rest. And he added, we wish the entire staff at DW a Merry Christmas in advance.
Thanks for that message, Thomas. A Merry Christmas to you and the rest of the club as well.
And Albert Angie from Kampala, Uganda, also wrote in, and he says that he's also delighted about our new morning broadcast. So now let's go to Zimbabwe, where President Robert Mugabe has been back on the global agenda. He's been making waves with some dramatic news.
We have been reporting that Zimbabwe's 90-year-old leader, Robert Mugabe, has fired 8 top officials from his cabinet. Among those fired was Vice President Joyce Mujuru. Mugabe, who has been in power for 34 years, accused the 8 of being part of a plot to overthrow him.
Yeah, and in response on Facebook, Fran Mann wrote, he is a senile man and way past retirement age. And Matthew Kurtku responded to that. He wrote, evil always lives forever. So a pretty dramatic response there. And Salim Muhammad wrote, Zimbabwe does not have rich resources like Iraq, Libya, Egypt, or Syria. Therefore, no one is interested in overthrowing him.
Actually, that is not necessarily true. Zimbabwe does have considerable deposit of gold, diamond, platinum, and iron ore. In fact, the country's mineral export for 2013 totaled $1.8 billion.
Okay, so I guess you can't really say they don't have any resources.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Peter Hanneman writes that actually, it looks more like Mugabe will overthrow everyone else.
Thanks. Just a quick reminder that these are responses from our listeners and online readers. We at Deutsche Welle edit these comments and make sure they conform to our editorial standards before we air them.
And in response to an online article that we posted that was titled Mama Pig's Lessons for Ugandan Farmers, written by our reporter Alex Jita in Kampala, Lillian Nambereka wrote, I really enjoyed reading this article. It helped me understand how to go about farming. I am also doing piggery on a small farm, but I hope to do something big with it someday. And Segai Kidane, who does not state where he's actually writing from, says he listened to Africa Link and he really enjoyed our reporting on the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization conference on nutrition in Rome. So thanks for that, Sigai. And that's actually all for me for now.
Thank you, Emily, and many thanks as well to you, Lillian, and Sigai. For everyone else, you can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, Deutsche Welle 53110, Bonn, Germany. Jose will be back at the same time next week. And now a reminder of our main stories. Nigeria's largest opposition, the All Progressive Party, has chosen Muhammadu Buhari as its candidate to face President Goodluck Jonathan in the 2015 polls. East African leaders have been meeting in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, to discuss the Lamu Port project. And we've also been hearing about the climate conference in Lima, Peru, where African representatives state their disappointment at the lack of progress to cut down on greenhouse gas. There, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link for East Africa. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. This is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany.